Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much, and please continue to help spread the word that this show brings on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And remember, if you can't listen live, go to our website at Answers Network and browse through a variety of heartfelt topics, and you can listen to this show as well at a later date. If you have somebody that you know that can benefit from this, let them know that they can go to the website, they can listen, and they may find something else that really helps them. Now, I'd also like you to do me a big favor, is to forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from this show. It's just one powerful way that we can make a positive difference in the world together. Now, this is something that our guest today has made a career of, and which is one of the reasons why we know that she is such a great fit for this show. Our topic today is separation anxiety and back to school, facilitating a smooth transition. Guest Florence Ramon, as well as an author and philanthropist who has always had a special place in her heart for children. She worked as a child care provider for over 15 years and believes the key to a family's success lies in focusing on what she calls the trifecta: parent, child, and caretaker, working in unison towards common family goals. Now, Florence is also the co-host of the podcast Finger Painting the Future, and her YouTube series, Windy City Nanny, sheds light on the variety of childcare challenges we see across the country. She has been featured on over 400 national and local media outlets across the country, including ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox TV affiliates, and so much more. In fact, yeah, there's more that, you know, we would use up half the show trying to talk about them. Now, her loyal followers on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube have grown into a robust, engaged social media village of moms, dads, grandparents, aunts, uncles, and childcare providers that continues to grow larger each day. And before we get to the end of this show, I want you to make sure that you check out her Instagram page or go to her YouTube page and check these things out. Subscribe and know that you can follow and learn so much more. Florence was born and raised just outside of Chicago, and she earned a degree in performance theater at Bradley University in Peoria, Illinois. She served as president and founder of a nonprofit board dedicated to autism awareness and now serves on the executive board of the Children's Research Fund at Lurie Children's Hospital and is also a founding member. Florence, welcome to Anna.
Thank you so much.
Well, the beauty of it is that one of the things that I do, as well as my wonderful producer, is we do our research, and maybe that's the detective in me. But I want everybody out there to know that it is very deserving, because there's just so many things that you're involved in that just fits perfectly with what we want to bring with this show. Is people that are making a positive difference in the world and doing so in so many different lives. So I think where I'd like to start, though, is that share a little bit about you and what you think brought you to become the person you are now. What are some of the things that happened when you were younger that you went, this is the choices that I'm going to make?
Well, you'd mentioned I was a nanny for over 15 years and I loved it. As Mary Poppins says, I stay until the wind changes and the wind changes. And I went off to do other things, other entrepreneurial things that I'd always wanted to do, one of which included starting a digital content company. But at the same time I was doing that, I still wanted to stay connected to children. I still wanted to stay connected to families. And I started looking at the landscape of all of that. And I felt that there was a real disservice going on, that we weren't speaking to children about a very big cultural shift in our world today, is that we have a lot of caretakers. You know, the truth is over 65% of families in America today have have a nanny or a caretaker or send their kids to daycare. And I think we saw during the pandemic how important it was that we were, you know, well, how important daycare was, how important childcare was when it was ripped away from people. Mm-hmm. Several years ago, I decided to write a children's book called Nanny and Me, and it was written from the child's perspective to help children understand what happens in your care, another form of childcare. And that really started the movement for me in terms of advocacy. I wanted to be an advocate for childcare in America. I wanted to be an advocate for families. And you mentioned before this idea of the trifecta, being there for the parent, the child, mm-hmm. and the caretaker, and making sure that we were taking into considerations all the values that are attached to that. And so now, after I've spent all these years working with families, working with children, staying connected in that way, my second book is going to have to do with the village. I always mm-hmm. talk about the pillars of a village, and I felt that we were also doing another disservice to our community by only talking about the village as it applies to families that have children. You know, it was a great saying that Hillary Clinton said all those years ago, it takes a village for the child. I decided ambiguous, and I decided that I needed to cut it in half into it just, it takes a village. And you hear people say that too. But no one gives you directions to the village. Right. No one tells you exactly how to build this village. There's no phone number to call. So I decided I wanted to be that phone number to call. I wanted to be the one to give directions to the village. And so now here I am, and that's my second book, which is really discussing what does the village look like? And if you don't have children, don't you deserve a village too? So it's the mm-hmm. idea that we all deserve to be part of a community and that we play a role in other people's villages and those people play a role in ours. And so that's really now started to marry all of my favorite things, you know, children and parents and nannies and caretaking and just truly people in general, making sure that they feel supported and loved and heard and understood.
One of the things that you talk about a lot is communication being the key. And that's something that I promote.
But specifically today, in discussing kind of children and the communication style you have with children, especially as you're trying to communicate things that are changing and growing and evolving day by day, and also trying to make sure you're a safe place for children to have these conversations. I remember when the pandemic first started, one of my best friends told me that her daughter found like a piece of like moldy bread in like a closet tucked away somewhere. And she came running out and she said to her, mommy, I found COVID, and was crying, you know, not understanding what was going on at the time. And that was a moment she had to kind of step back as a mother and think, how do I describe what is going on in this world to children, you know, that can't understand or wrap their minds around it. So as we're dealing with communicating with our children, and as, you know, schedules continue to get busier and busier, and as we're starting to transition now into, you know, being able to see more people again and being more social and restrictions, you know, lightening and kids going back to school, going back to daycare, it's this idea that you don't want to keep a secret from them. You don't want them to just, you know, throw, you know, baptism by fire, throw them in there, see how they do, you know, start reminding them, you know, what it used to be like. You know, you went to school and you had your friends and your teachers and, you know, getting them excited again about things that maybe they have forgotten, and trying to also comfort them if they are having a lot of anxiety about what does that mean when I'm with people? You know, we haven't been able to be with people. And if someone doesn't have their mask on, if they touch me, am I going to get COVID? Am I going to be sick? Am I dirty? You know, it's such a weird place to be as a childcare provider or a parent or a nanny, because you are dealing with very sensitive emotions and a lot of different feelings. And I always say to parents, it's hard for you to know exactly what mm-hmm. to say to kids when we hardly know what to say to ourselves or what we should be doing with our friends or family. So giving each other mm-hmm. a whole lot of grace and communicating whatever it is that you're feeling about the situation ahead of you is important.
Yeah. And again, like I said, I'm a big promoter of communication. And years ago, in working with my adolescent services company, one of the things that I recognized was, you know, I was taking at-risk youth, and some of which were diagnosed with autism mm-hmm. or on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I would ask them questions about their parents, you know, just, you know, just to, so that we'd talk because we'd usually be on an airplane. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing to me what the children didn't know, which meant the parents hadn't shared anything. It's like, oh, so, you know, what does your dad do? He goes to a building in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But what does he do there? Mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, mm-hmm. And so I think if parents would think about their children from the standpoint of communicating, both from the standpoint of sharing with them a lot more about what the real world is,
mm-hmm.
And then listen mm-hmm. to what they have to say. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I love, again, as I was learning more about you, is where you talk a lot about parents to listen to their children more and don't dismiss them. I mean, if it's something that seems, you know, not important to you or whatever, it may still be really important to them. So, mm-hmm. you know, show them the, you know, the respect and stuff of answering them appropriately.
I think a lot of people get stuck when wanting to discuss things with their children because you don't feel confident that you'll have the answer, or you don't feel confident mm-hmm. enough in the subject matter that you can speak it at expert level about it. But one thing that I've noticed is that it's cool to see your parents, or it's cool to see whoever it is that's taking care of you, not always have the answer, because mm-hmm. it makes it more relatable when you see the nooks and crannies, you know, that are not necessarily, you know, solidified or, you know, have it figured out. Because I know for me, for myself, even when I was a nanny, I was, you know, I'd have all these different kids, they would be doing homework and, you know, I'd be trying to like do their math homework with them and I can't understand it worth a lick. And, you know, they, you know, would look at me like, what do you mean you don't know how to do this? And I'm like, I have no idea how to do this. And mm-hmm. I didn't even know then, you know, so it's the idea that they do get to see that not everything is perfect all the time, and it's okay. It's better to not be that way. And everyone has their talents, everyone has their strengths and things they need to work on. But the idea of listening to your children, I love that you said that, because we do need to. And this is where I think we get in trouble. And you working with adolescents, you'll understand this too. You know, it starts with the sandbox, talking to kids, and mm-hmm. it's not the most natural thing in the world for every child to come to you with their fears or come to you with their feelings. I think we find this even in relationships with friends or romantic relationships, that maybe you speak a different language emotionally than they do. And that's part of the fun of getting to know someone, but your children are no exception to that. Not every child is going to be the same. And just because your oldest child may be like I was, this, you know, social butterfly and was talking all the time, I haven't changed one bit. You know, my sisters were different. You know, my brother was on the, mm-hmm. as autism. You know, so my mom and dad had to figure out what worked for each child. And so I suggest and really encourage all of you out there, you know, depending on the age of your children, really start to get to know them and ask questions and see what works for them. Because what you want to eventually happen is those kids are going to turn into adults. And especially at the teenager level, you're going to want them to still be able to come to you to talk to you. But that's not going to happen if it doesn't happen earlier in their life. They need to see you as that safe place early on.
Yeah, I love the fact that you touched on, you don't have to have all the answers. And right. I think that, mm-hmm. that too many parents, you know, freeze because they don't have the answer.
Right.
And how about the answer is, you know, I don't know that either. Why don't we look it up together?
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
And now you're doing something together with them.
Right.
You know, that is also kind of teaching them that maybe the next time they'll look it up. You know, they'll, you know, if you went to the encyclopedia or you went to Google or whatever, you know, to get the information. So there's so many ways that we can model for our children. And I think that's just one of many.
Right. And I think also not always saving your children is an important topic you're bringing up. You want them to be able to critically think. You want them to be able to use those brains that they have and problem solve. And I think that's something that I remember in school, you know, this critical thinking aspect of what we were learning. And you're like, I don't know what that is. That's just a bunch of bunk. But now you realize how important that is, because your life is not going to get any easier as you get older. It's only going to get more complicated. There's only going to be larger problems you have to solve. And it's okay to ask for help, certainly. But you also have to believe in yourself enough that you can also sometimes be your own solution, or at least be able to get to a point where you understand so much of what's in front of you, and maybe you need to go somewhere else to get, you know, across the finish line or whatever it is. There's no problem asking for help, but thinking that you are in any way absolutely incapable of fixing something or working through something, that's never a place we want our children to get to. We want to believe that they know that they're supported and they also are enough.
You know, when you just said that, we can't always rescue them, we can't, you know, we can't always do that,
right?
Because they're going to have to learn on their own. Right. It reminded me of one of my own stories where I asked my dad something, and he went through these facial expressions and he went, that's one of those big guy decisions you're going to have to come up with on your own. And I'm like, really? All of that? And I get, no. Figure it out yourself?
Right.
But I did. And I think that if parents sometimes would think about it, and, you know, here I'm thinking that he's going to have this incredible answer, but I think what he figured out was maybe he shouldn't solve that particular one.
And I would love to know, you know, what your father's thought process was in that, because that's such an expert move. I mean, what a great dad, you know, that he was able to step back and say, you know, this is my suggestion, not necessarily an answer, but also the way your father listened to you and what you brought that up earlier. You know, he was making the facial expressions, he was connected, you know, he was clicked in, and that I don't want to just skate through that, because I think that's also something we're missing today in a lot of ways. You know, life is very busy and we're distracted by a lot of different things. And getting someone's attention, knowing that they're focusing on you and they're really actively listening to what you're saying, you know, you're talking and they'll be able to respond, or they're thinking through things and they're not necessarily sitting there thinking about what they're going to say before you're done speaking. They're literally tuned in. I think we need to do more of that with our kids, because they do need to feel like they are heard. And, you know, one important thing too is me saying all this has nothing to do with you agreeing with what your child's saying to you. It can be a give and take conversation. You know, it could be a conversation you're even having about something that's going to end up with the child being punished in some sort of way because there was, you know, something occurred in the household that, you know, was against the household rules, or, you know, against your rules or values as a family. But it's this idea that you can still have a conversation. And you're going to listen to everything each other says in a respectful way. Gosh, could you imagine if we as adults practice this more often? Because I think in today's world, we have a really hard time with our counterparts, even listening and truly giving thoughtful responses. And the agree to disagree thing, gosh, I don't know the last time I think any of us ever really did that, truthfully, because I don't, you know, I think that's starting to be something of the past. Now it's, you just better agree with me. And that's not how it goes.
Oh, yeah. And I think we could do a whole show on just that subject. I mean,
oh, yeah,
that is such a huge,
oh, yeah,
huge,
that's a button for me for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And who knows? Maybe we should do a whole subject on that. Because,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But one of the things, and I think even without COVID, and even without this sort of, agree with me or, you know, or die mentality that's being put out there, as families, we were still getting busier. I mean, everything seemed to get busier and busier. And I noticed from the standpoint of, you know, coming from a time in which, you know, we walked to school to, now every child is driven to school and the parents park there and wait, you know, until they come out. And so they're lined up around the school. And but, you know, and then it's off to, it's either sports or it's music or debate team, you know, whatever it is, it's everything is so busy. You know, how, you know, with all of this scheduling and all of this busyness, I mean, you know, what do you feel parents can do to keep their lines of communication flowing and not turn it into where it's almost like a dictatorship of, you know, okay, go do this, go do this, go do that. Communicate with their kids, but also schedule things in such a way and know that they're part of the schedule, not just, you know, they have some input in that schedule. They're not just, you know, things that we're taking along and plugging in to go somewhere. How do you think that we can work with families in such a way that it can make their families flow better and they can feel happier and healthier about what they're doing?
Well, to expand on what you said before about kind of re-entering society, you know, if we're going to call it that, you know, you want your kids to be a part of the conversation because, you know, maybe they're just not up for being as overly scheduled as they were beforehand. And maybe that break during COVID let them see that there were certain things they learned that were positives, perhaps. One thing I'll bring up, you know, that I've been forcing, you know, parents are not forcing them, encouraging them to think about is, what did happen during COVID that positively affected your family? For example, maybe you had more family dinners and you never did that before because you weren't home enough to do it. Maybe you got to kiss your kids goodnight and read them a book, or you got to see them in the morning for breakfast, or just check in during the day and feel more connected. So I do believe we can't have gone through all of this if we're not going, you know, in vain. You know, we need to have learned something from it. Right. And certainly there can be positive things we take. But, you know, re-entering kind of this world again can be exhausting. It, you know, it's maybe not necessarily the right time for everything just to go back to how it was. Maybe there does need to be some assessment and some adjusting or modification to schedules. And listen to your children when they say that they're tired, or that they, you know, watch what's going on in school. Are they struggling academically, you know, because they're too over, you know, over committed extracurricularly? You know, maybe you want your kid to play piano, but maybe it really isn't a passion of the child. And after a certain point of trying, maybe allow them to explore something else. To tell you just a little anecdote about that. So our very good family friend was my youngest sister's piano teacher, and she recently passed away. We adored her, but she was never my piano teacher. I had a different piano teacher, and I was very untalented, Alan. And so that piano teacher that I had took my mom aside at one point and said, I think Florence Ann's probably done. I think she should probably move on to something else. And, you know, the truth is my mom really wanted us to play an instrument. She wanted us to do that because she felt it was good for our development. And she wasn't wrong. Yeah. But I just wasn't, it wasn't part of who I was, and I was never going to be good at it, and I had no interest in it. So I think there comes a certain point that you can try, get your children to try something, but then you have to take your cues from them about whether or not it is a passion of theirs, whether or not they're interested in it, and give them an opportunity to also to explore other options, you know, being, you know, telling them that there's different things, you know, what do you, if you want to dance or you want to, you know, kids are learning to cook these days, you know, taking cooking classes, and there's different ways to challenge your children developmentally. And I think letting your children have a say in things they're interested in is important.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. We're going to take a break in a minute, but what I want to kind of lead into a question, because anxiety has become on it's, you know, we now have anxiety on steroids. I mean, is what it's like. Right. So what I'd like to do when we come back, if you can talk a little bit about managing anxiety, because it's something, it's one of the questions that we get more than anything from parents that are asking us, how do you deal with this? And this was even before the pandemic, there was these questions, but again, now it's like it's on steroids. So we're gonna take a break. But for everybody out there, stay with us. When we come back, we're gonna talk a little bit more about how you can help manage anxiety that has been dumped on us at this time. So stay with us, we'll be right back. You're listening to Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service ensures that schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. Our guest is dealing with separation anxiety and getting back to school, facilitating a smooth transition. And one of the things that I like that Florence talks about is building your village. So Florence, let's talk a little bit about managing anxiety, both, you know, now with still having some issues with the pandemic, but even things that we could be doing before that.
I like that you said, you know, pandemic aside, you know, because I feel like, you know, anxiety is here to stay. You know, we're never not going to have anxious about something. You know, that's not something that was birthed from a pandemic, you know, but certainly you're anxious about different things. And I think we as a society hopefully are starting to get to the point where we're not as anxious anymore about everything. But there was a time where everyone was scared about every single thing that was going on. You were scared to even touch your groceries. Do you remember that? Oh my God, I really get something in your house, have to wipe it down.
We're spraying them.
Spraying them. I'm spraying people. I, you know, like, it's like crazy. We've come so far, but the truth is the foundational elements and tools of anxiety and managing that should always apply no matter the situation. But, you know, for example, you know, we really want to teach our children to engage in solution-focused thinking and, you know, mindful acceptance and balancing all of these different emotions that you're feeling. But the first thing I want to say, and I know this might sound, you know, very sophomoric, I suppose, but I think it's important, is actually identifying what is making you anxious and what that feels like in your body. How does that manifest for you? The way I feel anxious is not the way everybody does. You know, I know how I react. I know myself well. That child, what is that feeling that I get? And the best example I can give it is this. You know, I was talking to one of my kids' friends at one point, and she was telling me how anxious she was about things at school. Now, she didn't use the word anxious. She said that I get nervous about, you know, when I have to talk in front of people, or, you know, when I have homework to do that I don't get it. But she was trying to figure out how to explain to me what anxiety was. And she said that, you know, her hands, you know, would get a little shaky. And so then I started to see what she was doing. I started to see she was explaining how she was feeling, but didn't know a word to assign to it. So I started to ask her more questions about how she was feeling. I said, you know, I remember when I was younger and I had a project that was due the next day and I totally forgot about it. And my face got all red and I kind of got all cold and I started to, my heart was beating so fast. And I actually started to get mad when I was talking to my mom because I was so nervous about it. And, you know, as I was explaining this, she was like, yes, that's it. That's how I feel. And that, you know, and so we started talking about what anxiety is and how to manage that. And, you know, taking a deep breath and stepping away from the situation and asking for that help, you know, in that moment where you see your child start to spin out, you know, you want to get down there on their level, you know, and you want, even if that means getting down, you know, and sitting on the floor with them and saying, you're going to take 5 breaths together. You are not alone. I'm going to help you. Mm-hmm. We are going to figure it out. Don't meet the crazy with crazy. You know, there has to be a calming source. And if also you don't have someone around to calm you, self-soothing is a very important skill that we need to learn. And it's funny, I see once that children being more independent and able to self-soothe than children that do not. And you would think that would be counterintuitive. But yeah. The truth is that stuffed animal or whatever it is was teaching that child how to calm themselves down in a moment. And a child who doesn't have something like that doesn't know how to do that for themselves. There's nothing that So I thought that was such an interesting study. Yeah. And I like to throw that in my sister's face sometimes because I did sleep with something growing up and she did not. I'm like, this is why I manage my emotions better than you do. I'm just kidding. But the truth is you want to let children figure it out sometimes too. And for adults, and I think I want to speak to the adults here too, and not just about children. For me, it's about changing the environment. When I know that I'm starting to get worked up about something, the best thing for me in the world to do is to walk. Whether it's outside in Chicago, you can't always walk out because the weather. I listen to music, or I go take a shower, or I call a friend and just say, you know what, I'm just kind of spinning out at the moment, and I just need you to just kind of like listen to me. I don't need advice. I don't even try to even give it to me because I don't even know what is going on. I just need to say it. So I've learned what works for me in that way, but the only way I've learned that is through trial and error and allowing myself to figure that out. And we need to allow our children the opportunity to figure that out too about what works for them.
Yep. I could not agree more. We have a question that's coming in. And, and again, I want to thank those that take the time to do this. This one says, I love the words of build your village, let love in. There is such a need to return to the premise for living life. As a school counselor, I can relate to the enormous amount of anxiety our children and their families are experiencing. I've only been directly with to recommend. I am very much looking forward to this interview as we need to revive in our children the value of creating caring relationships that last a lifetime. And this is from Paula in Nevada.
Oh, Paula, what a beautiful note. Thank you so much for submitting that. I couldn't agree with you more. And you're doing the real work there, girl. You're dealing with, you know, doing a school counselor and all sorts of emotions there and managing those things. And that's a huge accomplishment. But this idea, though, about building your village and letting your love in and everything, like you mentioned, Paula, you know, it is about really the quality of the people we have in our lives and not the quantity, and also figuring out who we need to be supported. And in the book, my book that will be coming out next year, when I talk about these villagers, I actually have a movie. It's these people that play a role in your life, but also let you do a lot of internal exploration about who you are in other people's, and also figuring out what's missing from your life and who you need and what you need. And it's this idea that we shouldn't feel ashamed for needing a community, but it's about finding the right people to be in that community, the right people to support you. And it's not always the people that are going to agree with you. It's not always the people that are going to be the same background as you, same value system as you even. All of these people play a different role and are in your lives for different reasons. I always relate it to friendships. All of my friends that I have are my friends for different reasons. And they are in my life for specific reasons in terms of communication. I don't always call the same person for every problem. You know, sometimes I know I need to go to someone else that, you know, what this I need, or who's not going to coddle me, who's going to slap me back into focus or whatever it is. So I think it's this idea that, you know, like Paula's talking about, building these very deliberate villages, building and choosing these people. It's a very, very important part of our life. And it's not always consistent. People come and go in your lives too, and these villages will change and look and feel different. But the idea behind it, the reason we do it, is because we as a society do thrive on community and friendship.
Yeah. Yeah. And I use the word tribe more often. Mm-hmm. But I think it's very similar, because it's a matter of, you know, I feel that this is my tribe because we synergize in certain areas.
Right.
But at the same time, and especially now when we've seen this media divisiveness,
right,
you know, that you know, I still have people that are part of my tribe, whatever, that think differently, you know, that have been pulled in one direction or the other.
Well, that's a testament to you, Alan, because I don't know many people that can say that right now. That, I mean, gosh, I mean, even when everyone was getting vaccinated, unvaccinated, one of my girlfriends called me crying because she said she and her friend for many, many years had a huge fallout because one believed in vaccination and the other did not. And it's really, like you said, a very divisive landscape right now. So being able to keep friends that don't think exactly the same way you do, I think is a huge feat.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I know you touch on, which, you know, as far as, you know, transitioning back into a more normal situation, you talk about, you know, reintroducing old routines or reintroducing different villages, that if we can all, you know, we do have people that we're not in touch with as much because they've kind of gone to one extreme or the other. But that doesn't mean that you can't reconnect with them on different levels, you know, to, you know, just, you know, avoid the vaccine thing or avoid the political part or whatever it is, which kind of goes to what you said, is that a lot of people aren't able to agree to disagree on something.
Right.
And it's interesting. I used to know couples that married couples, you know, that voted differently.
Right.
But yet they had a very great and wonderful loving relationship, and they were raising their kids to think. I remember one time, you know, they talked about the way in which they were raising their children was to challenge authority, and which is a very difficult thing to do as a parent because you're challenging authority.
Authority, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, but that's what people did, and it worked. And so this whole concept of now thinking that you have to train them to pick a side is, you know, is not the way to go. And I think if we can get back to some, for lack of better terms, old routines,
right,
I think we're going to do a better service for all of us.
Right. I think getting back to center, I think, is a lot of what you're talking about. And I think we have spent so much time, like, I imagine it feels like, you know, being in like a grandfather clock and you're holding on to the pendulum and that thing is swinging severely left to right. And there's no, you know, ease to it. There's no middle ground to it. And you are just having these extreme swings, and that's not sustainable. And I think we all do need to take a breath and get back to center and remember things were. And like I said before, there are things that may have changed during COVID, changed you during COVID for the better, but not everything that's changed has been for the better. And maybe, you know, we've all become a little hardened or a little jaded or a little less respectful or whatever it might be because of everything that went on. And yes, we have an excuse. I suppose we have an excuse because we were all scared and in it together and had different ideas about how the problem should be solved. And even now have different ideas about how things should be solved or handled. But I don't think we've gotten better at respecting each other. That's one thing I think that has drastically decreased. And we already had trouble with that before because social media was a breeding ground for a lot of bullying and things people said that were inappropriate or unkind. And I feel like we really need to take a good hard look at the person we are today, the person we are presenting to people today. And are we happy with who we are today and how we're treating people? I think that's a very interesting exercise.
Mm-hmm. We've got another question coming in. Question, I think it might be more of a comment, but this one says, with the mask and vaccine mandates being imposed on children here in California, while at the same time being discontinued in other countries, how are we ever going to change the level of fear and anxiety that they are feeling? The normal world they once knew is gone, and people in control seem determined to keep the negative agenda going. I have pulled both my son and daughter out of school to protect them, but the emotional toll of the separation from their friends has been heart-wrenching. What is your advice or opinion for parents such as ourselves who are caught in the middle of this nightmare? And this is from Ariel in San Diego.
Well, Ariel, I my heart is with you. You know, I live in Chicago and we have very strict mandates here, mask and everything. We just, they just moved us to, in one of our counties, our largest county, Cook, you have to, your children, 5 and older, have to be vaccinated in order to go anywhere inside now. And that's, and no, not even a negative COVID test. So that's changing a lot of different things around here. And we have a very, very, hard and fast rule about, hard rule about the mask mandate. And one piece of advice I'll give you is, it's not actually even my advice. It's something I heard last week. So I sit on the board of Lori Children's Hospital here in Chicago, which is a, you know, world-renowned hospital. And they were discussing school and wearing masks and everything. And this specific researcher said to us, you know, keeping these kids out of school, you know, as they keep shutting things down and keeping them remote and all of that is not going to solve the problem. That's not going to be the end of the pandemic. That's not the issue. That kids do need to be in school and they need to be with their friends, because what we're finding now and what they're finding in their studies is now we have a whole new host of problems. We have right. mental health issues. We have now obesity issues because kids are not being active. We are having social issues with children, anxiety now, you know, whether or not, you know, being around people, talking to people. You see these COVID babies who see a face and they scream because they're not used to being with people. And, you know, so we do have a lot of challenges ahead because of the environment we've created for our children. Right. But I don't believe, in my personal opinion, and anyone's able to disagree with me, that we are handling things the proper way right now when we see around the world other people doing things. And when are we going to catch up to that? Because we've done everything they've asked us. And in my personal opinion, now it's time for the world to go back and live with this virus.
No, I'm right there with you. And, you know, it's really a sad thing, because you know, for those that don't understand that it's, you know, it is a you know, it's a control issue now. It's not a virus issue. It's not a health issue. And you know, people talk about following the science. You have to wonder exactly. Well, but you know, it was something that was being said all along. When they didn't have answers, when they didn't have answers, they were saying, follow the science, because science was saying, well, we don't really know, but it could be this. And it could have like some we pointing out, and because we're talking about children right now, you know, the fact that, you know, that it is less dangerous. This particular variant is less dangerous than the normal flu that people have had for, you know, hundreds of years.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, it's less dangerous, but yet, you know, so there isn't really an answer other than the fact that it's a control issue. But we need people to stand up, you know, don't continue to follow, again, kind of what we said before, you know, like you should be training your kids, challenge authority. It's hard to do when you are the authority, but teach them to challenge authority, but you have to challenge authority as well if they're going to do it. And well,
I agree with you, Alan. I was just going to say, you know, watching all of this unfold from the child's perspective, and, you know, I live in Chicago where you see us on the news all the time for a lot of things that are not great. And, you know, the teachers union, you know, they had this whole, you know, they kept the kids out of school for a few days while they were trying to negotiate. And even our mayor, who I hardly agree with, she was upset about them keeping the kids out of school, though, which I did agree with that. And I always would say during all of this, once the kids went back to school, which I was always, it always puzzled me. And that's why I knew it had nothing to do with resources or anything like that. You know, I went to Catholic school basically my whole life, private Catholic school. And if anyone knows anything, you know, these are schools that suffer in terms of resources. They're not public schools who are funded. And I saw all these private schools go back, and they have never shut their doors once since those kids went back to school last year. And we saw in the public school system in Chicago, shut down after shut down after shut down, and remote learning and this and all. And I would look at it and think to myself, you can't be blaming the resources. Now, maybe I don't know everything. And that's right. There's three sides to every story. There's going to be theirs. There's going to be the other side. And there's going to be the truth to it. But mm-hmm. I did see a big disconnect there, because why could the protocol that was working for these other schools work? And why right. could these kids go back to school and these teachers feel safe and all of that? But it's not working over here. Why aren't you learning from what's going on over here then, and then implement that to what's going on? And don't tell me it's a resources thing, because a lot of these schools certainly have less money than the public schools do. So that was a point of contention for me during all of it, because I felt like it was a political move, not a science one.
Yeah. And I hadn't thought about this till just now, but maybe it's time to readdress the voucher system again. To start shifting that power. Mm-hmm. Because if you have the voucher system, you're going to take money away from those that are making decisions that aren't necessarily in the best interest of our children, and shifting it to where your choice is either shift to a level in which you want to support our children properly, or you're going to continue to lose funding. So maybe that's a way to go.
Consequences, right? I feel like there has to be consequences, and we're too far down the rabbit hole now. And this pandemic, we're trying to get to the endemic stage of it. And you know, I don't fault the beginning of it the media had made a lot of things worse with it. But you know, the science part of it, they were trying to figure it out. And fine, I think the big joke is 2 weeks to slow this. You know, you're like going third. No, okay, and fine, we'll give you that grace period of not knowing. But now, you know, you still get the CDC coming out every other day, changing their minds about what they think we should be doing or not doing. So you know, you get to a point where. And one gal said this to me the other day, and I thought it was well said. And for you parents out there, those of you who have commented too, I think you'll agree, they're tired of the disruption of it. It is disrupting mm-hmm. their lives in such a big way. And it's not like they can go anywhere for help with it. You know, if you got kids under 5 and you live in a state where they have to be vaccinated, you know, what do you do? Now you're in this weird limbo where I can't take these kids places, but you know, sorry, it is disruptive, and it's not sustainable. Okay. And I wish there was a way to fix it.
I wish we had more time, because so you and I need to do this again. So I'll talk with my producer and let's do this again. But I anticipate we were going to go in this area, but I've had a guest on a couple of times that essentially has the cure for a particular type of cancer.
Oh.
And that cancer, and it has to do with two different things. So it has a blue light thing, and then something else that allows them to target the cancer so that it doesn't destroy the rest of the body. Mm-hmm. So this is brilliant. So I've had him on a couple of times over the last 5 years. Okay. The cancers that they have shown both in a petri dish and I think in mice that it completely cures it.
Wow.
They can't get to the human testing and stuff. They're now about at least 5 years into this, but there's over 600,000 Americans that die every year of this cancer. And yet there is no fast track for that.
Right.
But yet they were able to fast track a vaccine that we don't necessarily know what's going to happen. But they say with this cancer thing, well, you need to do more research. You need to do more of this. You need to do more. You need to do more. And there is no fast track for it. And so they believe that there are another 5 to 8 years until they're going to be able to get approval. Mm-hmm. That's 600,000 people a year that are going to die. So if this whole vaccine thing really had to do with saving lives, wouldn't you do that one also? Wouldn't you fast track that?
I see your point. I definitely do, especially sitting on, you know, a board that has to do with pediatric research. You know, we see how complicated the approval process is, certainly for different trials and things like that. But it's certainly not a fair essay, Alan. I think the whole world, I think, is just as frustrated. Those researchers out there who are trying to do all this work and get grants and approval and FDA and all that sort of thing. It's It's not fair. And I don't know that that's ever going to be a fair process.
All right. So how can people get in touch with you? How can they reach your podcast, your Instagram? What is the best way for them to stay in touch with you? So when the next book comes out, they're already in position to get it.
Please visit me on my website, FlorenceAnnRomano.com. Visit me again, Florence Ann Romano on Instagram. I answer every DM. If I can ever help you in any sort of virtual way, I'm here for you. I know these are times of crisis in many different ways. And if you need a shoulder, I'm happy to be there for you. I have lots of blogs on the website that address a lot of the topics we talked about today and more. But yeah, stay tuned. I'll be talking a lot within the year of this next book and what to expect from it.
That's great. Thank you. Have all of those. Don't feel like you had to try to write that down. We'll have all of that on the answers.network website for you. Florence, thank you so much.
Thank you, Alan. It was a pleasure.
All right. And for everybody out there, please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network, or you can subscribe to the show through whatever platform you listen to podcasts on. But if you like what you hear, please leave a review, because it helps us reach more people. And I want you to know we greatly appreciate it. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
Hello, I'm Marty Cove. You might remember me from roles such as Sensei in the Karate Kid films. I've done over 100 films and countless stunts in my career, and I've always given 100%. With the damage done to my body over time, I needed to find relief from my chronic pain. My passion for health and fitness drove me to find a natural way to combat muscle pain. Teaming up with doctors, detectives, and a compounding pharmacist, we've created Marty's Cobra Cove Ultra Strength CBD Cream. It's the only thing that has been strong enough to knock out my pain, and fast. Honestly, you may have tried the rest, but it's time to try the best. It's legal, it's safe, and 100% effective. Show your pain no mercy. Go to www.martyscobracove.com.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.